Off the Ball, GAA.
It would be good if Cork supporters and Cork people could treat him like their grandchildren, you know, as a grandparent and not a parent. So, because you can't disappoint your grandparent.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Daily.
Well, 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 you're very welcome to Golf Weekly. Joining me as always, Gary Murphy, Dave McIntyre. Lads, how are you?
Hey, boys.
Hey, guys.
I mean, if you're listening in Ireland, then you know that the biggest sporting story of the century took place yesterday at Croke Park, with Mayo finally ending 75 years of hurt to win their fourth All-Ireland, Dave?
Their fourth, yeah.
Their fourth All-Ireland. Jesus, only four. Anyway, so obviously everyone like waiting for you, Gary, to come in, Dave and I. Dave, who was lucky enough to be there, having done a bit of work in the pre-match, and then you had nice seats.
Incredible seats. Yeah, we were blessed. You know, we were working for a couple of hours in the build-up to throw, and we finished at about 10 past three. And then I was sitting in front of the Mayo bench, immediately behind the members of the extended Mayo panel, and about five rows behind Andy Moran. It was just amazing. Just to see, you could hear all of the discussions between Andy and Keith Higgins and Colin Boyle.
No way.
It was amazing. And every instruction they barked onto the field, you could hear it. You know, you could hear the interactions between Boyle, who's such an animated character, and the fourth official. So any decision that went against Mayo, he was up in the fourth official's eye line and go, "What was that for?" and give you an explanation. Oh, lads. And the last, 20 minutes, was just the tension in the stadium was.
So, did you watch it, Gary, I'm assuming?
I saw the second half, yeah.
What?
Well, I saw the last probably 7 minutes first half and then the second half.
Right. I presume you had some like life-saving urgent work to do that stopped you from watching all of the match.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Good stuff. In my golfing WhatsApp group, with about 5 minutes to go, I just wrote in, "This couldn't actually be happening, could it?" Like this. And then one of the lads goes, "I didn't want to be the first one to say it." And then at that point, Dave, it was just like the Mayo goalkeeper, who kept going out to his right with his kickouts and must have lost five ball, like Kerry won five in a row. And so then in the group with like, I was like, "What the fuck are you doing? Will you find an alternative kickout? Will you just keep possession?" Anyway. An incredible, incredible day. And for Mayo fans, both in Mayo, Ireland, and indeed the world over, like just the sheer outpouring is incredible. A marked contrast. See, lads, there's a segue. Mayo waits 75 years to achieve the pinnacle. Jackson Coivin wins the 3M Open in his third start as a professional. This is guy. Actually, he has much more in common with Kobe McDonald than he does with any Mayo fan. I don't know if you like how much of this you saw, but this kid. Like I'm going to damn him straight away. But he's the next Jordan Spieth. I've decided.
I like this guy. I really do. He's like a lot of our listeners. Really avid golf fans will know who he is, but as you say, it's just his third start in the PGA Tour. He's only just gone 21, like in
yeah,
and he just has something about him. He's not your stereotypical collegiate star coming out with the, as me and Gary have discussed the last couple of weeks, with that boy band swing. He has quirks to his golf swing. He looks the part. He interacts with the crowd already at the tender age of 21. He's fist pumping and driving himself on and taking risks. And there's a lot of negatives to this week. I don't want to get into right now because you're just taking away from what Jackson Coivin has achieved, like in terms of the golf course and the tournament. And maybe we'll get into that in a few minutes' time. But for him to kind of hold his nerve when the world number one and a four-time major champion is hunting you down. And
yeah,
I don't know, was he, I only saw glimpses of his post-match interviews. So I don't know, was he asked the question as to whether or not he's a leaderboard watcher? But if he was, he just would have seen Scotty Scheffler rise up the leaderboard as he posted a really solid final round and like left an eagle putt just long on the last, and suddenly got to within two, and that's the moment you start to crack. That's where I think the golf course saved him. So,
He had, like, he started early, birdies 1, 4, and 6. They were nice. He had an unbelievable par save at 9 from 14 odd feet. Then kind of cemented it with nice birdie at the par 5 12th, easy birdie on the 16th, which is drivable. But it's just lovely to finish. Hold, beautiful par putt on 18, again from whatever, between 13, 14 feet. To win. So he finished at 25 under, and Dave, you meant, like, I mean, the course is a bag of shite, like, let's not kid ourselves, but it doesn't take away from this guy's win. And Gary, like, obviously I'm quickly running to learn about this guy's background, you know. So won 3 consecutive SEC individual titles, 6 college events in his last season as an amateur. He helped Auburn win the national championship, was the leading amateur at the US Open. Like, he was an unbelievable college player. And certainly in this win has shown an ability to translate that dominant form on the PGA Tour. And as Dave said, when you have the world number one breathing down your neck.
And you have the crowd going, Scotty's coming for you, Scotty's coming for you.
True.
This kid's special. He's way more orthodox than Jordan Spieth was. And he's a much, much better player at this stage than Jordan Spieth was.
Yeah.
And he's an absolute superstar in the making.
He's handsome.
Yeah, he's marketable. He speaks well. I've followed his career probably closely the last 12 months.
Okay.
He's an absolute, like, he's the best player to come out of, like, his stroke average last season was 67.3.
Jesus.
So, yeah. He's probably the best amateur, if not better, than when John Rahm came out. And obviously he's had because it's just difficult, these guys coming out and how they transition. Like, and there's a valid point in that he missed his first cut, which is absolutely fine. That happens. But to win in your third start, I mean, it's insane. Absolutely insane. The course is easy. It's a perfect course. It's the week after the Open. So the last thing guys want to do is go somewhere where you're going to get beaten up. But equally, it's hard. It's probably as hard to win a birdie fest as it is to win a battle in some certain respects. But he did 3-shot lead going out on Sunday.
Yeah.
And he plays it in 5-under bogey free. That's not normal behavior for a 21-year-old kid who's been a pro 3 or 4 weeks. Plus he played awesome in his starts. I think he had 3 top tens last year in his PGA Tour starts. He's a special, special talent, but sometimes that doesn't count for anything. It's how they acclimatize to their new environment. And he's up to 70 in the FedEx. They'll probably end up getting deep into that. He's, you know, uber keen. He feels like he's just started playing golf because he's on a new path. So I think, it's a very, very exciting talent coming out.
Mm. Like, to your point about, like, he's a lot more orthodox than Jordan Spieth. Obviously, Jordan Spieth is a very distinctive swing. Like, I was watching a video of him, and he doesn't really alter anything. He hits, it's just all feel for him. Like, withdraws, like, it's like he's pulling his elbows down a little bit, and for fade, he just feels.
Yeah, pros think way less than amateurs.
Yeah, so we, you know, overthink.
Your most amateurs have more swing thoughts than Tarzan. You know, your last 10 thoughts before impact. So, you know, these guys, they don't think like that. And obviously they have the ability, and it's their full-time job, and most people work 8 hours a day and play for 5 hours on a Saturday and expect to hit the ball out of the middle of the club.
Yeah.
These guys are practicing 6-7 hours a day and understand that less is more. But... It's It's the step up in class. That's always how do kids acclimatize to the new surroundings. And he got interviewed by Amanda Balionis at the end, and he's got a couple of things written on his glove, and one is to dominate. So he decided he wanted to try dominate. Now, when I was listening to it, there was a little bit of the Curt Strange coming out in me.
Kid, you learn?
Re-Tiger, per se. But all the ones that go forward and keep going forward have a stronger mentality than the ones that don't.
I think,
and the mindset now with these kids coming through this university system, they're just going to go out there and kick ass.
Yeah.
You know, there's no learning curve. It's just, you know, like he shot back-to-back 62s in college. That's not normal stuff. Like most people mightn't shoot, even successful pros throughout their career mightn't shoot a 62 as their lowest score. You know, they might shoot a ton of 64s and 65s, but to back up a 62 is, I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's next to.
I mean, look, after one event where all of a sudden he's now the talk of the town because he's a winner, so I'm fully aware that none of this is really fair on him one way or the other. But like, as I said, he's a handsome guy, well-spoken, he... as Gary said, he had like, we're going to dominate. He had all these motivational messages on his glove. Like, I guess in a sport that is constantly looking for the next thing, the next guy who's going to be not gray, who's not going to be dull, who's not going to look like an accountant wearing a glove on his left hand.
Or two gloves.
Like, I mean, the one thing you can say about Spieth, Dave, is that he has charisma. Like, even just him giving out to himself, the way the relationship with Greller, all of it. It's just, he's a remarkably charismatic individual. And I feel like is that everybody watching is just waiting, okay, this is the guy, Jackson Coyven, this is the guy who's got the charisma to be the next Spieth.
Yeah, well, we love a knee-jerk reaction. And yeah, we're sure, always looking, particularly in a sport where there are a lot of dull participants on a week-to-week basis, that we are always desperately looking for the next big thing, the next player who's going to get us onto the edge of our seat, that we'll kind of make sure we tune in to see. And there aren't that many of those, and it's very early to say that in 5 to 10 years he will be reflecting on the 20s of Jackson Coyven as being one of those sorts of guys, but there's definitely potential for him to be that person. I'm far more likely now to spend a little more time watching the Rocket Mortgage Classic this week than I would have been. Because he's right on the edge now of making the FedEx Cup playoffs. He's in 70th position, so he's got a bit of work to do this weekend in his final tournament at the Wyndham to make sure that he's playing in the first round of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And there is sort of these guys do come up along every so often, like with the guys like Anthony Kim, for example, guys like Jordan Spieth, and some of them are more successful than others. I think that he, well, just to go back to what you said about Curtis Strange, the win gives him the opportunity now to learn, to make his mistakes. He's got the 2-year exemption. He's guaranteed a place at Augusta National next year. And he's got the freedom now to play without the pressure of, oh God, I have to get my card as quickly as possible, particularly now at the way the PJ Tour is going to be split over the next couple of years. And so he's got the freedom to go out there and figure out what it's like to be a week-to-week PJ Tour professional.
Yeah.
And you would hope that he continues to play with the ability to withstand that sort of pressure. But like, he's going to hit shots in big events, and whether he's in contention on a Sunday that he hit yesterday, that he's going to pay big, heavy penalties for. And I hope that he's mature enough and those around him are mature enough to realize that, you know, some of these shots that he hit, squirrely efforts in the last six holes, the golf course bailed him out because there was just so much bailout area. There was so many poor shots that were hit by guys at the weekend that weren't properly punished. And that if it had been a different golf course and slightly more stringent, he may well have kind of crumbled down the last 5 or 6 holes. So it's worked out beautifully for him. And it's ahead of him now.
He was leading amateur in Shinnecock. That's where, you know, that's the most penal of tests. You know, and a lot of those mistakes in, I know the course wasn't unbelievably demanding, but they all have their foot down. They're going at everything because they have to. So a lot of the times that's where you'll see a few squirrely ones, but not that this kid's pedigree is.
Yeah.
The ceiling is very, very high for this kid. If, if everything around him stays normal. He seems to be pretty grounded. Grew up on Muni playing golf. I think that's so important. You get a lot of that in Scotland. I was up in Donegal at the weekend. I think we need a few more kind of little par three pay and play courses, just to get little talents that might never appear because they can't join a golf club or whatnot to get into the game. It's not that expensive. And he's a good news story from a kid that, came from pretty humble background to he's not that humble this morning when his check for 1.8 million hits his
No.
account. And he would have the other side of it too, he would have signed, for a lot of money. So the expectation is not financial on him, obviously. He just wants to get his head down and, as he writes on his glove, to dominate. So he's starting off pretty quickly.
Other couple of points to be made about the 3M Open. Michael Kim shot a 59, which seemed like almost an afterthought by the weekend. It's the 16th sub 60 round in PGA Tour history, but 13 of those 16 of 59 or lower have come since 2010.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Gary, modern scoring conditions, how are they so markedly different? I don't mean is it because the actual scoring average across the year changes fractionally over the years, but these very, very low rounds are far more commonplace today than they were. Is it because the PGA Tour, so for example, like the TPC Twin Cities, the setup is really, really easy, so bad shots aren't that punished. Is that it, or
I think
equipment?
agronomy is a big thing. If you look at a lot of these courses, they're irrigation systems, and this course superintendent wants a lush green golf course on TV. So the one thing that negates very low scoring is firm, fast greens. And when you're overwatering, not overwatering, when you're watering too much on these courses to make them look bottle green, you're going to have soft conditions, and you're going to have target golf. And these guys are incredibly good at what they do. So, on a bog standard course, the par on some of these courses, as a winning total, is probably 67 and a bit of change, or 66 and a bit of change, and that's how good they are. Kim shot 59, and he wasn't really in contention come late on Sunday. Which is kind of frightening, really, but and aligned with equipment as well. The golf ball and the drivers, the mishits with drivers are nothing like they once were. And at this elite level, a toe shot or a heely shot's never been like you're not seeing guys winging it miles off the planet now, really. And their wedge play is stunning, and you're putting on perfect greens. Like if you look at the total at LIV. Seemingly, the greens last week on LIV, like from 20 feet out, you have a 20 footer, you knew at 19 feet whether it was going in or not. So
Jeez.
they're putting on pure surfaces.
Yeah.
So what is that a good thing? I don't know. I like a little bit of a mix. I love a 7-8 under and a bit of a bleed. I also think it's fun to see people doing, backing up really low rounds, which is the hardest thing to do.
The first Dave, the first thought I would have had is like, oh, I think it's a bad thing that there are so many sub 60 rounds compared to pre-2010. But then I'm thinking, sport evolves like everything. So, we have the sub 4 minute mile and, like everything evolves.
Yeah, it does. Not necessarily for the better. Like, is it? It doesn't necessarily mean that, the quality of the golf has dramatically improved in that period of time just because we're seeing more sub 60 rounds. Obviously, the golf course setup plays an awful lot into that. And now, in fairness, there are obviously players who are going around to really tough golf courses and shooting very low rounds, just like we saw at Birkdale last weekend, where we got 362s, was it, or 63s. So it does happen on really tough courses as well. I think some of these courses and the course superintendents and the tournament organizers, they want the better players to come and play. Now, like, I was surprised that Scottie Scheffler was there this week. Obviously, he's had a busy schedule. He's just flown back from the UK after the Open Championship. And he doesn't need to be playing in this tournament, for which, like, the winner's check is only $1.5 million, which is obviously huge for nobodies like us, but like for Scottie Scheffler, it's meaningless. So I wonder if the, if he knew he was going for to be in for a really stiff test this week, having just left the Open and all the travel that went with it, and playing a tough golf course in Birkdale, would he have been interested in playing the 3M Open? But if he knows he's going to be given the 4 days to hold some putts and maybe find a little more of his game, and you know, wide open fairways, he can work on a couple of things mid-tournament. Maybe that's a reason for him to kind of show up. That will change in 2028 when your schedule is your schedule. Whether you're on the Championship Series or on the Challenger Series, you are going to be playing where whichever tier you're in, that's where you're going to be playing. And obviously, within that, you can choose not to show up to one or two events. So I just wonder, will some places be able to maybe give their players, their participants, a stiffer test in the knowledge that they have to go and play there anyway? I'm not sure. But this was, as of 2028, what we watched over the last 4 days was a look into the future that will be the Challenger Series. This is your stereotypical Challenger Series event where the top six all finished 20 under par or better. You could wipe a drive and it wouldn't have very many consequences. Bogeys were really difficult to come by, and it's not all that entertaining.
Scheffler.
Fiona, I remember years ago I played the European Open in the K Club, and I was only starting out my career, and obviously a very difficult golf course with lots of rough. And I played well. I finished like top 25. I had a good week. I was on an invite. And the following week, I went to Finland for a Challenger event. And I started on the back nine, and about the 12th or 13th hole was par five. And I was trying to bust this drive as far as I could hit it. And I've hit it about 30 yards left up into the rough, thinking, dumbass, lost ball. Went up, found the ball in a perfect lie in the rough, and hit a 3 wood onto the green and two putted for a birdie. So Dave's point is very valid that, some weeks, and the scoring that week was crazy. Say the cut was probably 4 or 5 under par type of thing. So it's not a bad
Interesting.
week.
I guess I said at the beginning that the course is a bag of rubbish. I should amend that. I don't mean that the course itself. I meant the setup. But then again, I'm reminded, and both of you have just done that. You reminded me that, like, look, you had a very difficult contest at Birkdale the following week. It's actually okay to have like a 25 under win. I imagine that when the championship series comes around, that you know, the course setups will be tougher. And I guess it's that balance between they want to attract the best players and, you know, ultimately if it's going to be penal and horrible, maybe some of the best players will go, you know what, not for me, not this week. Scheffler, to the point you were making, Dave, he said himself he played because he doesn't want a big long layoff before the FedEx playoffs. So it's just about ticking over. And he also made this interesting comment about he heard that the family hospitality was really good there, so he wanted to try it out, which I thought was, it was actually quite a sweet thing to say. I don't know if, whether he's, you know, yanking chains or not, I don't know, but I thought it was a very sweet thing. It's just like that, yeah, they treat my family really well, so I've heard that they do, so I'm gonna go and see if that's true.
Yeah, it's probably an unheralded thing that golfers need to take into consideration that we would never really be thinking about. So it's interesting that, you know, they factor an awful lot of things into it. But that's kind of, it kind of underlines my point. Like he was probably looking, you maybe he's looking for reasons not to go and play in that tournament. And one of them would be, ah, look, I've got the family with me, and if they're not being taken care of, I can take or leave this event. But he finds out that it is maybe got a good reputation, and that's another reason to go and play it. And obviously, the wide open fairways are another one. But look, it's great that he's playing. I want to see Scottie Scheffler play every week because it
So do
makes
I.
me more likely to tune in and watch the tournament.
This one's for you, Gary, as someone who plays. So Lucas Glover, he walked across one of the, took off his shoes, walked across one of the greens in his socks. It was a bit like, it was a bit unclear at first, and then he later admitted that it was because he'd been called up and says that his metal spikes were causing indentations on the green. He is his form of protest. He thought he was being unfairly singled out because loads of players wear metal spikes. My question is like, why on earth do players wear metal spikes still today?
A lot of the faster players need them for traction. I think Rory still has spikes. Whilst the new shoes are great,
Yeah.
a lot of them do it for a bit of grip, really. Now, I know they're all moving their feet, but they're moving them at the appropriate time and they're not slipping. That would be, the more speed, I guess, you have. There was a famous comment years ago, Declan Brannigan, the famous Irish amateur. This guy lunged at the ball, and Declan said to him, "If you'd missed that, you'd have been spinning for about 20 minutes." But it's for traction, really. But what's the problem with them if you can tap down the spike marks?
So this is the question I was going to
It's
ask.
ridiculous. Like, it's like when a
What?
guy misses a putt, and Tyrrell Hatton's brilliant at it. Now, he doesn't miss that many, and he missed none at the weekend. But and then they tap the green down after they've
Yeah.
missed. You
But
can tap spike marks down. I don't see a problem with it.
so this is my question to you. Given that, so I didn't realize why players still wear metal spikes, given the quality of the new shoes, et cetera. But if that is indeed the case, that it gives you greater traction or greater grip, particularly for the quick players, the PGA Tour officials know this. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that 40% of the field is still wearing metal spikes. Why on earth are they going up to Lucas Glover and going, "Yeah, no, listen, you're damaging the green with your metal spikes"? That just
Well, I
seems.
don't know. It's ridiculous.
But was
Yes.
it a was he approached by PGA Tour officials that there was a complaint made by the group behind him, or was the complaint from the group behind him made directly to Lucas Glover?
There was complaints that his metal spikes were leaving marks around the hole. Maybe by, I don't know if whether it was officials, but his point is that, like, if I walk up to the hole, my spikes are going to make an indentation. There's no way I can avoid it. So, to prove his point, he took his shoes off.
I do think, and it's like a massive bugbear for me, is pitch marks. But I do think if you are playing with spikes, you're a little more considerate when you're, after you've tapped in and that kind of stuff. It's maybe he wasn't, and maybe it's a thing. You wouldn't know. Listen, there's a lot of gamesmanship out there, so I'm not suggesting he's the one guilty of it, but if there's some asshole in the group behind you and you're dragging your feet a bit, who knows?
Maybe, yeah, absolutely. I don't know if has anybody watched that Hawk thing, Will Ferrell golfing thing on
It's
Netflix?
atrocious.
It's so bad. But I got sucked into it over the weekend, so I had to watch the entire thing, and I hated myself for it. It was so, it's so bad.
Does it get any better?
No, gets worse.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, he's obviously an incredibly talented actor, but
He
the
makes
script
him.
writing is
It's terrible.
atrocious.
Well,
The
I'd argue
language,
that
because
since.
the language in it too, because I actually sat down to watch it with my little fella and couldn't watch it. The language
Oh
is
yeah,
horrific.
it's fairly R-rated, all right. No, but it's just terrible. Anyway, I'd argue that since Will Ferrell and Adam McKay stopped working together, I feel that Will Ferrell's career has been. And that's not the point. I'm going to switch. I want to talk very much our own home, but like the South of Ireland Championship was on, and we were all, well, certainly in my group of friends, we were all like watching Dave Howard, who got to the semi-finals, but beaten. Lost 2-1 to Tommy Bone, the Welshman, at Lahinch, and he went two up early and then knackered. But he said it himself. He's had an incredible month, and you were saying, like, so obviously, other than hoping that he would win, the key is whether he would get a pick for the Walker Cup. Gary, given his performances, like, he's not locked in, obviously, he's not a shoe-in, but like, do you think he still has a chance?
Well, my opinion on it is a bit old school. If you're not on the six-man team at the Europeans, it's difficult to get picked, I would imagine, for a Walker Cup team. David was not in that six-man team.
Right.
Ireland won the European Championships. Thomas Higgins won the winning point on tie holes to win the whole thing, which was phenomenal. Thomas Higgins beat Conor Graham, who's probably the stud of the GBNI top 10, top 12 players. Stewie Graham will probably be number one because he won the Amateur Championship, but Conor Graham's probably the best player-ish. And Thomas Higgins beat him in the South. Now, he did
Yeah.
get beaten in the quarterfinals himself, which is a good run. Gavin, because it's a change this year. The Walker Cup is every 2 years, and there's a year, there's only a year's gap this year. I don't know why
that's
that
right.
is. Maybe COVID or something. But so Stuart will definitely be on it.
Thomas Higgins clearly in contention.
Thomas Higgins was kind of lucky to get on the 6-man team by all accounts, but performed remarkably well.
Yeah.
Gavin Tiernan, who hasn't played great this year, but he did very well in the Europeans. But then these two Welsh kids came, I wouldn't say from left field, but, and you'd like to think, because Dean Robertson and Raymond Russell made a concerted effort, that everyone really needs to play the South of Ireland because the Walker Cup is on there. I think it would be unbelievably unfair for the guy to win the championship not to get picked. So maybe, you know, how many Irish, you'd want a couple of Irish on the team. I think if we get two, we'll be lucky. If we get three, we'll be very lucky, but hopefully we do. But yeah, it was, I mean, it's going to be a spectacular. The South's always a great championship, and Hinch love it. No different up here in Baltrae. They love the East of Ireland. And it was great to get such a stellar field. Conor Graham shot 61, I think, in there, 62 maybe in the qualifying. So yeah, it's a brilliant run for David, but I'm not sure if he's going to the US Amateurs. That's still to come before the team is selected, I think.
That's right. Well, that'll be the one where I presume Gavin Tiernan and Matt McLean will be looking to strengthen whatever claims they have.
Yeah, Matt McLean, he had a really good qualifying there. So I think it's food for thought. I don't think some of the big guys have put their hand up as much this year. So whether they go for, because Dane Robertson famously is going to pick a team that he thinks will win the championship, win the tournament. Whereas historically, back in my day, there was a whole lot of political agendas going on. You had to have a certain amount of guys from each country-ish. So, listen, the two lads know their eggs, so they'll go for the best players. I just love, it would add, as it did when I was in Portmarnock, you know, Garth McGimsey, Padraig and Paul were on it, and it really added to, you know, the whole thing. But Lynch will be amazing and they'll put their arms around it.
Oh, I can't wait.
And it's like it's 30 euros for the weekend to go down and watch the Walker Cup.
I can't emphasize enough how excited golfing fans should be about the Walker Cup. It's the first time it's played in the Republic since 1991.
Yeah. And Koivun would have been on this team.
Had he not turned pro.
Yeah. And there'll probably be three or four other kids that aren't a million miles away from his level, Americans. The American team is going to be very, very strong.
Yeah.
You'd want a little bit of a blow-in off the Atlantic, which might level the playing pitch a bit. But, yeah, you'll see some awesome young players. And hopefully there's a few Irish there.
So the South of Ireland was won by Sean David. He beat Tommy Bowen by a hole, even though Bowen had led by three holes with six to play. Like, then he lost 13, 15, three-putted the 16th to go all square. Then three-putted the 18th. Like, Sean David hit this, like, 200-plus yards. He hit a 200-plus yard 7-iron to 10 feet. I was just like, Jesus. But for, obviously, look, Dave Howard, who is a friend of the pod, he's someone you and I, Gary, have played with. I know him. I know his dad. Again, I know it feels boring to say, but like he's an unbelievably impressive guy.
He is, and I think had he got the silver medal,
and
got a semi final, he'd obviously have a. Who knows? I just hope there's at least two or three Irish on the team.
There's a couple of other things I want to talk about. Is the Scottish Women's Open? So Jenny Shin won the Scottish Open at Dundonald, which is her first victory for about 10 years. Difficult conditions on Sunday. She shot a 75, but she won over A. Lim Kim by two. Leona Maguire shot a final round 70 that had six birdies in it. So she finished tied eighth.
That's the best finish for a while, isn't it?
I was going to say, lads, you know, like Leona, she's not really been challenging the upper end of a leaderboard for quite a while, so this is good news for her, for sure.
I was watching it, actually, the highlights reel this morning with my, and it's, I'd actually, anyone who plays links golf, just watch, now that it's packaged up really poorly, but like they did a 12-minute highlight reel and they didn't put a leaderboard up once. It was horrendous, but because I couldn't watch it yesterday. But the rhythm is unbelievable. It really is. They always have enough club in their hand. And I was saying it to my little fella, look at that. And he goes, Dad, it's Tempo Town, which was
What did he say? Tempo Town.
it's Tempo Town, yeah.
Come here, he's inherited that turn of phrase that his father has, let me tell you.
But
That's
it's such a, well, obviously a funny, but such a beautiful way to put it. Like their
Yeah.
rhythm is, like they're never under stress with the club they have in their hand.
No.
You know, if that was a, if you were watching a Junior Scratch Cup highlight reel, there'd be lads beating the life out of wedges into, you know, 130-yard wind type of thing. And these women were just so in control.
Yeah.
And the way she bogeyed the last was fantastic. You know, there was no stress, no panic. Hit it in the rubbish off the tee, chipped it out sideways, hit a wedge down the fairway to leave herself another wedge in, and very mature because she hasn't won for years. So,
Yeah.
and same, she obviously seemed like a very popular winner, but
You see Charlie Hull's quad?
Yes.
I'd say there was a bit of a firing with that pin position. I think it was ridiculous, wasn't
Like it's the pin was just farcical. No matter
it?
how big a tournament it is or how much of a test you're looking to provide the players, like the pin was pretty much on the edge of a ledge. For any of our listeners that didn't see it, she has a birdie putt from about 12 feet, 15 feet. Ends up putting it past the cup, off the green, and then takes four chips to get the ball back up onto the green. It keeps rolling back to her feet and then eventually holds an 8 footer for a nine. Having had a birdie putt, she walks off with a
Quad.
nine. And
Come here.
it's unbelievably difficult to watch, but it's gripping at the same time.
It is.
Yeah, that's the
Here's the
saddest
thing,
thing to
though.
do.
Can I ask you this, though? Okay. Now, it seems mad to think that Charlie Hull, who is obviously a top pro, wouldn't have considered this as an option. Take an unplayable and replay the shot. That's it.
Yeah, well, I guess
Yeah.
that's with your hindsight goggles on.
Exactly. Who's
But
had
we
their
never
wits?
think you can
Who's
take
ever
an
had their wits
unplayable.
about them taking the nine?
But she
Nobody.
thinks she's going to hit a perfect chip first up and she's going to walk off with a bogey.
Yeah, and then she'd practice the first one, so the second one will be definitely better.
Or maybe she's even thinking, I'll hold this chip for par. So, yeah, like it's a rule that is potentially one that can be utilized by players, but players are so confident in their abilities that they're never going to.
I don't agree with the rule either, Dave. I think it's a liberty.
Sorry, the taken unplayable is. Yeah, no, but it is the rule. You can.
I know that, but it's still feels like a bit of a liberty. But
Yeah.
anyway.
Okay. Well, the other one I was going to ask you about, Nelly Korda, so finished tied 16th. Look, the whole thing is a warm up for the Women's Open, which is at Lytham and St Annes. Does Nelly Korda inspire you insofar as like with an ability to really dominate a links course, do you think?
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
You think she's the game for it?
Yeah, my little lad asked me today because I think she's an amazing player and her swing is just awesome.
No,
Said,
it's
Dad,
perfection.
if you played her off the blue tees, do you think that you'd beat her? I said, I've no idea, but probably fall in love after about three or four holes. But oh, definitely. Like there was a great open. What was it, 2 years ago when Lydia Ko won in St Andrews? And of course, she plays golf in Florida. She's well used to playing in the wind.
She's good here.
I mean, it's minimum a club and a half wind every day in Florida. So, and when you're world number one, you're versatile. I think Lytham probably won't intimidate the women as much because they're so much straighter from the tee. But obviously, the bunkering there is the big obstacle. I'm surprised the Open's gone back there, but for the men in a couple of years, but. Yeah, I think it'll be a fantastic tournament. And hopefully Leona can get a bounce because she's, you know, made a swing coach change this year with Sean Foley. On paper, it looks like it's not really betting in at the moment. And no matter what you do, a good finish on an eighth place is a strong week for her going into the major. So hopefully she can get a bounce because confidence is something you just can't buy.
We also have the Senior Open, the Men's Senior Open, which is at the King's Course at Gleneagles, and then we have LIV Golf. Gary, I was just sorry I didn't see your name on the leaderboard at the Senior Open.
I honestly couldn't watch it.
No, it's fair enough. That's totally understandable.
I missed the qualifying on Monday, and I left the golf club at 6 and got home at 3:30 because I took the ferry, but I had to drive by Gleneagles on the way down, which was
It, I
just
mean, I
tough.
know, look, I know it's obviously disappointing, but can you share what happened to you on Monday?
I shot level par. 3 under was the mark. It's a bit of a joke, really. There was 80 guys for three spots,
Jesus.
so it was, it's kind of, it's getting tighter and tighter. 4 or 5 years ago, there was 10, 11 spots at these things. The other course, but I did the course that Blairgowrie, the course I played. It's one of the nicest golf courses I've ever played,
Right.
but it was unbelievably narrow. It was a one rounder, and I decided I was going to hit driver everywhere. And it's the low score of the day. There's no point playing safe, and it wasn't that easy a course if you're laying back to 180, 200. And I lost two drives in a level par, so I was thereabouts. It was just frustrating, but they're hard things to get through because obviously it's a numbers game, and then someone is having a day or two. So but it was frustrating.
Yeah. Oh, I. So anyway, look, Gerry Kelly won. Lauren Coughlin finished tied fifth. So Gerry Kelly, this is his first senior major. He's recorded no top 10 finishes in the season and has been struggling with back problems. So look, if you're a Gerry Kelly fan, this is a nice win for you.
Well, my cousin is a Gerry Kelly fan, and I think she had a few bob on him as well, so she's even happier.
There
But
you
yeah,
go.
he's a class player. I think that's his 14th win on the Champions Tour, which is
Yeah,
remarkable
but
for
good
his
if
senior career. And he's a great guy. Like, he's universally popular with everybody.
that's yeah, you see, he always comes across very well. Dave, this one's for you because obviously I know you're the biggest Liv fan here, so
Oh yeah,
yeah.
been a bad week for Liv.
I mean, Jesus, it's just yeah. Well, a good week for Lucas Herbert, who won the UK event. Won it by 6 shots and then dragged Ripper GC to the title. Good on you. Good on you, Lucas.
Hazard a guess as to how many shots GMAC was off the leader.
Go on.
Have a guess. Just pluck a number out of the sky. See if you're remotely
13.
closer. 38 shots off the lead.
What?
But
GMAC finished 8 over par and Herbert finished 30 under par.
it was an outrageous winning total. Bo was actually back to work. He was working for Brandon Grace, so he had a decent week to finish top 20, but
But look,
he
they're
was just
decent crowds. You know, the Live UK event always does get a big crowd.
yeah.
And the face of it as a standalone event, it can be construed as a success. But in every other aspect of Live and its future, it's been a terrible week for them. They're being sued by a couple of people for varying reasons. So they're going to have to settle in some way for payments not made and contracts not being honoured and.
So they've been sued to that. So Moby Systems, who are a Canadian broadcast tech company, they've sued Liv for it doesn't look like a huge amount. It's $1.13 million US in alleged unpaid fees. But look, obviously with Liv's overall spending, this is small, but it just contributes to this. This is a league under huge strain. Then there's also now Liv apparently have settled this. So it's a trademark lawsuit with Stinger Golf, who make the golf tees, over the use of the Stinger GC name. Like, if you're explaining, you're losing, and it just feels very. And like, apparently, Stinger Golf wanted $100 million in damages, and it seems like it was settled for, I hear, 1 million. Surely the biggest news of the week for Liv is the Asian Tour, who is
Yeah.
likely to start a partnership with the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour.
It is because I thought I was really happy because I was, as a former Asian Tour player, and no players or tour struggled more than the Asian Tour during COVID. And I thought it was fantastic that they finally had a cash injection from Liv and gave a lot of opportunities for young pros to find their feet and earn a career, and for the older guys to keep playing. But yeah, they've jumped ship very quickly, and I'm glad that partnership is back, really, because there was always a great relationship between the European Tour and the Asian Tour back in the day. And now with the PGA Tour coming on board, it's very exciting for that part of the world for golf, because they'd be avid watchers of the PGA Tour as well. So,
It's another
but
big blow to Liverpool, isn't it?
it's a big blow to live, yeah.
Like the official golf ranking points, that's gone now.
Yeah.
That's what these Asian Tour events are going to be used as part of their investment portfolio.
It's got.
Kind of the layout and the package they were looking to put together to encourage potential investors to get involved, like having a number of national opens, which would have formed part of the Asian Tour, that was going to be a part of what they were offering. That's gone. Like they still need 350 million just to get things off the ground for next year. And you've even got players now breaking ranks. Like Martin Keimer was speaking during the week and said, it looks like the finale for LIV Golf this year is in serious jeopardy, that it may not happen at all.
Yeah.
That he has admitted that the players don't know if there's going to be a LIV Tour circuit in 2027 at all. So, they, as I heard someone, one of the lads on the No Laying Up podcast, saying the calls are coming from inside the house now at this stage. And you've got one of the team captains in Martin Keimer, the Cleek's captain, saying what he's thinking out loud. I'd say someone like John Rahm is only waiting for a payment to be missed or for somebody to confirm that they're not going to be able to pay the full amount of his contract. So that'll be a breach of contract for him, which will mean he can get out of what he thought was an absolutely watertight agreement that he had made with them. So look, it's just going to get worse and worse as the weeks go by. They're looking to kick the can down the road for as long as they possibly can. But like, at
Didn't
what
Graham
point are they just giving
McDowell,
up?
didn't he just say, sure, look, I can all just play the DP World Tour?
Yeah, everyone's looking for a an off ramp,
Yeah.
no matter what that off ramp might look like. But it was inevitable. Like, who would have thought that a product that was utterly unsustainable and built on sand and billions of dollars of oil money that was never going to be a guarantee into the future was not going to be the best investment prospect? And here we
True,
are.
but it was a no-brainer for the guys to go, and they went.
And I'm not blaming guys. Well, I don't blame some of the guys for going.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can point the finger at some lads who just did not need the money and who were adamant they would never be going. You can definitely blame them, and you can blame some of the guys who at the very start spoke so clumsily and badly about the reasons for going. If they had just said, somebody like a Westwood, a Poulter, a McDowell, I'm at the very end of my career. My ability to earn proper money over the next 10 years is dramatically reduced because I'm just no longer competitive in these PGA Tour and DP World Tour golf courses. I'm taking the money. And everyone just, like Harald Varner III did back at the start, he just said, this is a business proposition that I simply cannot turn down to generate generational wealth for me and for my family. Fair enough.
Yeah.
You're upfront and open and honest about it. Or like Dustin Johnson, just say nothing at all. Don't
Yeah.
Yeah,
talk about
absolutely.
grow the game and all this
I
crap.
imagine like the road back for look, it'll be fraught a little bit, but sure, the pathway back for John Rahm will be fairly kind of predictable, I think. I
Yeah.
think for even Joachim Niemann, even for Lucas Herbert, I look. John Huggan last week, Gary, I don't know if he surprised you, Dave, when he said this, but I've been thinking about it since. John Huggan said that the tour doesn't need Bryson. Like, we think he's kind of a star right now, but like, if Bryson kind of fades away, the tour will move on. Now, since then, I don't know how you reacted to that, Dave, but I thought it was an interesting comment to make. He's not entirely wrong. Even though Bryson is a massive star right now, but he's not Tiger Woods.
No, he's
And
not. But there is, obviously, there's truth in what John was saying, and that the tour has moved on in many respects from LIV Golf and losing some star players. And they have survived. And I wouldn't go as far as to say they've gone from strength to strength, but
no.
they have obviously survived and moved with the times. But we keep every so often, every couple of months, somebody talks up. Brings up the impending rights deal negotiations that are going to have to take place when the current TV contracts expire. I think it's 2030. And if they want to be able to produce purses that remotely resemble those that are available right now, they're going to need stars to sell airtime to sponsors and to, more importantly, TV networks. The TV networks want bang for their buck and they want big viewerships. They're not going to get them if you don't have superstars. Yes. they will survive, and they will still probably negotiate a pretty handsome deal with the TV broadcasters in the absence of someone like DeChambeau. But his presence certainly can't hinder the product.
See, no. I think that's why I was surprised at first by what John said, because Bryson, never mind, like, if Bryson has an option, obviously, he could just, like, he said it, he alluded to it, that I could just do YouTube golf. I think if he stuck with YouTube golf, it would be a terrible mistake, because eaten bread is soon forgotten. And in the end, like, after a while, who cares? You know, you're then you just become another guy. You know, you're doing a YouTube golf. Meanwhile, there's out guys winning majors, and you're not. You're not one of those. From a PGA Tour perspective, though, I want Bryson back, and I want him back tomorrow for precisely that reason that you're saying, Dave. Like, you know, bankable stars, big names that have broader recognition. And Bryson, whatever people think of him, Bryson has big name recognition.
Well, the YouTube golf comment was just a negotiating tactic.
Yeah, yes. But it's a stupid thing to say. It's
but
like,
he
I could just
says
do you, okay.
Silly things.
It just feels is that like I think, and again, what these guys perhaps, maybe they do know it. Maybe it is just nonsense and I'm just naive, but like, you can do YouTube, but it has to be, you have to be a major threat plus YouTube. You can't just be YouTube. After a while, like, nobody cares, you know? Oh, look at this, I'm bombing at 340. And you're like, so what? There's 10 other guys do that as well, you know? But like, the guy who challenges or contends in majors, who also has a YouTube channel, that's a powerful golfer.
Yeah, I think both have to be aligned. But, you know, it's, they're negotiating on bankable stars, and Bryson is that. Whether you like him or loathe him, he's one of, off the top of my head, maybe only six players in the last... Seven players in the last 10 years to won more than,
yeah, no. There's no doubt.
He's won
no
two
doubt.
Majors, so he's a huge draw, and there's controversy everywhere he goes as well, which adds to the whole mystique of his show. And he'll be back in the PGA Tour. It'll all be a lot of bluster about will he, won't he? But he's still very young and fit and keen to do better. So
they'll all be back. 2 years time, they're all back.
They'll all be back. It'll be great for DP World Tour, because we'll get, you know, the 20 rock solid players back to bolster the middle events, and then when the stars come into town, you know, it all sells itself too. But I think it'll work out very well in the end.
So that's our lot for this week. I'm going to talk to Max Kennedy at some point, who, young Irish star, part of the Shane O'Grady class. He's going to be playing at that Hotel Planner Tour. And Gary, to your point, you're saying, like, the Walker Cup is such a great opportunity to see the stars of tomorrow. Like, another opportunity is the Hotel Planner at Killian Castle in a couple of weeks' time. Well, 3 weeks' time. Max Kennedy is going to be one of them. So I'm going to talk to him ahead of that, just to get a sense of where he's at, the state of golf in Ireland, et cetera, et cetera. And again, like, I was at the event last year. Honest to God, like, these guys are unbelievable, and particularly on my home course, is to watch pros play a course that I play every week. And it's like they're playing a different game. It's an entirely different game. So keep an eye out for that. Nathan, if Nathan, who a proud Mayo man that he is, if Nathan can manage to come down or get over the enormous hangover that he surely has, he's going to be talking to Shane on Thursday for the Ryan line. So keep an eye out for that. So you have to look, get your questions in on the Discord channel, or you can email golfweekly@offtheball.com. Lads, I would be terribly remiss if I didn't share with you that I had my best score at Killeen for 4 years at the weekend.
Well done. Wow.
40 points with a scratch.
Don't throw that in. Why do people do that? 40 points. Forget about the scratch.
But beaten on countback. Beaten on countback.
What are you playing off these days?
I had 15 shots.
Okay.
Well done. Super.
The dried out golf course is obviously helping the likes of yourself, the shorter hitters.
Right. Okay. I'm going to add this. My comment around the Hotel Planner Tour is not an accidental one, because they've been growing the rough up. Gary, Have you been to Killeen lately?
I haven't. No, I haven't. No, last summer was my last time up there.
Listen, I swear to God, you could go into that rough and I guarantee you'll find like English explorers who got lost in the Amazon in there. I'm telling you, the rough is so penal at the moment.
Yeah, but the fairways are wide up there. It'd be grand.
Behave yourself. I can't hit the ball consistently onto a fairway. Anyway, so I was very, very pleased after. And do you know what I put it down to? I started practicing again.
Wow, there you go, eh?
I
What about that?
I'm
know. Surprised you didn't lead with that. Like you buried the lead there. We could have spent the first 25 minutes of the show talking about your 40 points.
Yeah, true. No, I was very, very pleased. And I say this as someone who doesn't put, like, if I can break 30 points, I'm generally walking away feeling like, okay, it wasn't a terrible week. But I haven't even broken 30 consistently at all for the last year. So 40 was nice. So I was very, very pleased. Right, lads, listen, as always, thank you both very, very much. And sure, we'll catch you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Off the ball daily.